Are you looking for a new devotional resource in 2019? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February is Day by Day in Genesis, 365 Devotional Readings by Martin Luther. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, Day by Day in Genesis, 365 Devotional Readings by Martin Luther. The book of Proverbs has several different ways of describing wisdom. We've been discussing it in the course of our series on the book of Proverbs with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. One of the ways that we've maybe mentioned here in the course of our conversations, but haven't gotten into any great detail, is in terms of two women, a lady who is wisdom and a dame who is folly or foolishness. We're going to introduce ourselves to Lady Wisdom in Proverbs chapter 3. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us as we continue our series on the book of Proverbs. He's senior pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois. He hosts a radio show called Sharper Iron. He's author of the books Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible, and Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again. Jonathan, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be back, Todd. Thank you.
There are two ladies in the book of Proverbs. Refresh our memory about them.
So we haven't really gotten into Lady Wisdom much yet. Today is really the first time we're going to see her. We have run into the other lady, only as a hint so far. She's going to come back as well. The two ladies are, or two women are, Wisdom and Folly. And what you would call them in front of their name, the title that you would give them, has a lot to do with how you value them. I remember a professor, Reed Lessing at the seminary, used the terms Lady Wisdom and Dame Folly, or Dame Foolishness. So distinguishing between a lady, one who has etiquette and propriety and concern and manner, and a dame, a girl that would be floating from guy to guy, kind of used by the guy, not wise for sure, although perhaps worldly wise. And Solomon uses these women to compare faith and unbelief, to compare the revealed wisdom of God to the worldly wisdom of man that is away from God, chasing things that are not of God, and then also to compare natural wisdom. This is not the revealed wisdom, but wisdom that can simply learn how the world works, and the fool who simply refuses to let facts change his mind or let life teach him anything at all. And today we really, for the first time, see this lady wisdom. So it's a tool, a structural or a literary tool called personification, to take an idea and make it into a person so that with the way that person acts or looks, we can have a better image of the idea, or an emotional image of the idea. It works very well for postmodern people, although personification's been around for quite a long time.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but is this Lady Wisdom described in many ways as one might describe Christ himself?
Yes, without question, by the time we get to Proverbs 8, wisdom is Jesus. And I don't think there's any way around that. Wisdom is the Word who became flesh and dwelt among us. And that might seem weird right away because it's like, well, how can Lady Wisdom be Jesus? Well, it's a personification of Jesus. Lady Wisdom is a fictional character that embodies who Jesus is eternally as the wisdom of God as a woman, but not because he's a woman. Probably mostly because the word wisdom is a feminine word in Hebrew. So like Spanish or some other languages more than English for sure, there are masculine and feminine conjugations of words or nouns that just have that edge to them, and wisdom is a feminine noun. And so Solomon plays with that idea and then counterpoints it again to Dame Folly. But we're going to see here right off the bat, actually, maybe we skip ahead a little bit. This section would be verses 13 through 22 of chapter 3. Verses 13 to 18 introduce Lady Wisdom, but then verses 19 and 20 kind of turn a corner and say some pretty astounding things about her. Now, it doesn't say this is Jesus Christ. Instead, it attributes to her creative powers. So verse 19 and 20 say, the Lord by wisdom, right? This lady who has just been being described in the previous verses, we'll come back to that. The Lord by this lady, wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, again, wisdom, just with a different word, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew. So this is only a touch of what will come later as well, when Lady Wisdom will talk about being a master craftsman by the side of the Father as the Lord is laying the foundations of the earth. This is all kind of a hint, a foreshadow of that that's coming later. But you see this really stunning thing. Solomon personifies an idea. He says, this is more than just an idea. This is a person, or can at least be seen as one. And this person is creative. Not in a human sense, like I take some clay and mold it, but that God himself actually relied on the power of this person to create. The creator who creates out of nothing, created out of nothing by means of this creator. And Trinitarian language can be a rabbit trail to chase down. But it very much is evident here that the Lord and Wisdom are both creative powers. It's also interesting, this is a little more of an aside, you see this connection in these two verses. The Hebrew mind sees earth, heaven, and the sea as these three elements that kind of describe all of the created order, all of the universe. We think of space now as being so infinite and big because we can see so much of it. For the Hebrew, it was the stars in the sky. They were kind of connected to each other. And as your life as a human being, without being able to have space travel or telescopes, you're on the land, you're in the sea, and then there's this sky thing. These three parts of your life every day, not, if you're not by the sea, you're not going to see the sea every day, but these three major distinctive parts of how humans experience the created world, these three things, earth, heaven, sea, summarize that. And then again, this lady is the way that God created it. And that is a profound statement. It would even lead to, and maybe we'll talk about this more when we get to chapter 8 again, it would lead to some real debates within the early church on the eternal nature of Christ, with Proverbs being kind of a central text that was being thrown around. And we'll leave that maybe for when we get to those texts proper. Here we see just the foreshadowing, the hint of this, as we're introduced to this woman that verses 13 through 18 describes.
So there is the graces of the lady. You say the first taste of the graces of the lady, beginning with that declaration that whoever finds her is blessed.
Yeah. So beatitude, right? Jesus speaks the Sermon on the Mount. He opens it up with blessed are, blessed are, blessed are. We call those things the Beatitudes. And I used to always think it meant you were supposed to have that attitude and you're supposed to do these things. And it's completely backwards. The word beatitude just means to be blessed, which is exactly what Jesus said. You are blessed. Here Solomon has his own beatitude about wisdom. And it both opens and closes this section. So if you look in your English Standard Version, it's very evident. Verse 13 starts with the word blessed, and verse 18 ends with the word blessed. So you have these bookends of blessing. All of these blessings are connected to who wisdom is to you when you find her. But that idea then again of this not being law, but gospel at the end of the day, it doesn't deny that wisdom has law to it, but that even God's revelation of the law to the Christian mind is something God is doing for us. He makes our good works for us to walk in those ways. And at the end of the day, we can only say we are but unworthy servants receiving gifts from God. So blessed is the one who knows that, and blessed is the one who knows the law, the promise that the law is being given to you in Jesus to walk. So blessed is the one, verse 13 says, who finds wisdom, and the one who gets understanding. So it opens up just with this general idea. Wisdom is something that's a gift to you. And then you have these four other descriptions, five maybe there, other descriptions of what this is like. And again, it's not personification so much here as metaphor. So verse 14, the gain from her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. And verse 15 has a similar idea. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. So wisdom's blessing, firstly, is more valuable than profit. Whatever gathering you might do in this life of good things, they are not as valuable. No matter how valuable they may actually be, it's not as if gold and jewels are not valuable. They are valuable, but they are not as valuable as the blessing of knowing this God, wisdom, who created you, right? In verse 16, then, it talks not only about having profit, but that in this is life. Verse 16 says, long life is in her hand. In her left hand are then riches and honor. So along with life, you have honor, which maybe isn't quite the same thing as justification, but it's awful darn close. Because if you think about it, when you seek to defend yourself, when you seek to justify yourself in any conversation, what are you feeling threatened about at that moment, if not your name and your honor? Someone has said something that you think makes you have a lower standing, and you say, no, my standing should be like this. And here Solomon says, well, that standing, that honor, that being justified, period, is in the left hand of wisdom. And in her other hand, the right hand, is long life. Now, we're going to get to a little more about life in just a moment, but the idea that life comes from God as a gift and continues to be done so is what God is in some ways, or I should say, without God, life does not exist. Hell is not like life without God. Hell is eternal death. Is there awareness? Is there conscience? Well, yeah, we're told there's going to be pain, but it's not life. And to understand that distinction, that real life is then to know and be in contact with God, and to be apart from that is worse than to be in the void. That's pretty huge as an idea. And here again, the blessing is that if you find the wisdom who is God's word, that's yours. It's given. It's handed out to you. Then in verse 17, she is also the giver of peace. So it's not just life with warfare, it's life with pleasantness. Her ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Now, thy word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. This idea of the path is also a huge idea in Proverbs, that there are two roads you can walk. The wide, easy way, that's the way of folly and leads to destruction, and the narrow way, that's the way of wisdom, but leads to peace and life, value, strength, honor, goodness, all those things. And again, to seek the word who is God's eternal wisdom is to have these things given to you. So that sort of as a summary, but also as a bit of a new idea, verse 18 says, she is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Now that phrase tree of life does not show up a lot in the Bible. It's a pretty loaded term. You might remember that in Genesis chapter 2 and 3, there are two major trees in the garden that are named. We're given all the seed-bearing fruits of the earth to eat as humanity. But there are two that have names, and one we're not supposed to eat, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's how all the hootenanny of the fall happens. The other one is called the tree of life, and it really isn't mentioned after it's talked about being there until after we've fallen, and God says, well, they can't have this now, and that's why they get kicked out of Eden, is lest we would take out our hands and reach to the tree of life. This also shows up in the book of Revelation, where around the throne of Jesus Christ, ascended, returned, reigning over all things by the power of his blood, there is the tree of life, growing by this river that flows through the city of God in which we're going to dwell forever, bearing different fruits in every season, and its leaves are for the healing of the nations, it says. Beautiful, beautiful imagery. And then you have what many theologians have seen, that there is another tree that is the tree of life, the cross of Jesus Christ, the wooden dead tree on which life himself hung to die in order to be the fruit of life for all mankind. That idea, again, while not showing up on every page of Scripture, is a pertinent and loaded part of the whole scriptural worldview. And here now, Solomon applies this to wisdom, right? This is like on the level of applying Creator to wisdom, is to say that she is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her, that she is, in fact, eternally begotten life. Again, a hint at the sonship that's being spoken of here, the second person of the Trinity that's being confessed here through a metaphor, through a shadow. It's incomplete, and it's also only our first taste of the shadow. We got much more of that coming in the next couple chapters of the book.
Pastor Jonathan Fiske is our guest. It's our series on the book of Proverbs. We're talking about Lady Wisdom when we come back. That refrain, hearkening back to a previous conversation with him, my son, takes us back to wisdom as a father speaking to his son. What's the difference between brokenness and repentance? I've written a column in the latest issues, etc., a journal titled Personal Brokenness. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Alfonso Espinosa writes about being raised a nominal Roman Catholic and finding the saving gospel in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
In the family of God, we never run out of people to love. This line from Robert Zagore's article, Who is My Neighbor?, cuts to the heart of the Lutheran Witness's February issue on mercy. Beginning with the earliest Christians and carrying the story forward to present-day mercy work in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, this issue will open eyes to Christ's great love for the Church and the Church's great love for a world in need. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Lady Wisdom in Proverbs 3 in our series on the Book of Proverbs with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. The latest free online Issues Etc. journal has a Wittenberg Trail feature written by Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. He's a faithful Lutheran pastor, but his story begins as a nominal Roman Catholic, and he said he really did not understand the concept of salvation by grace for most of his time there. He found it then in the Lutheran Confessions. You can find it as well, and you can read about his story in the Wittenberg Trail feature in the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's free and it's online. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Subscribe by clicking the red button, entering your email address. We'll send you the latest Issues Etc. journal. Jonathan, there is this refrain you point out, my son, at the end of the passage we're looking at. And this takes us back to a previous conversation where Wisdom is a father speaking to his son.
Yeah, and I hadn't really noticed this thing I'm about to say until I was looking at this particular text. And, I don't consider myself a master of the Book of Proverbs. I consider myself just a burgeoning student of it. But it's beginning to remind me more of the way that St. John writes his letters. If you ever read John's letters, you can sometimes feel a little dizzy. It's like, wait, you just changed topics really fast, and now you just changed topics again, and now you just said a fourth thing, but it's actually the first thing you said. So it's like you're running in this spiraling circle, and you keep coming back to these topics, and you keep introducing them and bringing them back over and over again. And for the Western reader, which I would say I am, we are by nature, those who are used to having like a beginning and an end, a thesis statement that drives everything, you know, and 3 points to prove the thesis statement, that can be a little disorienting. But I don't know if I can make a case for why it's better. It's the way that John writes. It's the way that much of the Eastern and Near Eastern ancient world would write and think. And Solomon is definitely taking that approach to introducing topics here in Proverbs. So whereas we've been dealing with this son idea a little bit, father to son, it was introduced, but then it went away, and then it came back, and now he drops in a new idea, and then a fourth idea, and then he comes back to this sonship thing. It's like he keeps peppering the book with this more major theme, and then these minor themes are supposed to influence this more major theme. So even the pursuit of Lady Wisdom versus Dame Folly is in the context of a father saying to his son, don't go sleep with prostitutes, find a good wife. But he's not just saying that. He's saying that too. And we should say that to all our sons and to all our daughters, frankly. But he's also then saying that that is a picture, marriage in this case, is a picture of what it is to have faith in God. So verse 21 and 22 are like a little blip keeping us in that circle, so that we don't lose sight of it as we begin to move into new ideas. And he says, my son, do not lose sight of these, like everything I just said. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. And again, for like the Westerners, like, well, hasn't he said this like 15 times already? Why is he saying it again? It's because he wants you to meditate on it. He wants you to dwell on it. He doesn't want, you really can't read Proverbs like you would read a thesis paper or a magazine article. You sit down, you just read it straight through. You're not going to get much out of it. It reminds me of another book that is well worth the time of you if you like philosophy and kind of proverbial wisdom. It's called The Art of War by Sun Tzu. He was a fairly famous and well-known Chinese military commander from ancient China. And the book is written like a series of proverbs. Sometimes there's two, sometimes there's four. But if you try to sit down and just read straight through the thing, you're going to be like, well, that was really boring. He didn't say much. But if you sit down and you just pull two lines out and you dwell on those two lines for 15 minutes, like read them a bunch of times over and over again and keep coming back to them, you begin to see like, wow, that's really deep. Like that, there is so much in just that little phrase there. And so Solomon is wanting us to do the same thing. He's wanting us to keep coming back to this idea that I, as a son, like I should see myself as a human being, as a willful, somewhat naive son, about to enter out into the world and in danger of losing sight of the things that matter. And my father's greatest concern is that I don't lose sight of them. And so he keeps speaking them to me. With the promise that, verse 22 then, right, don't lose wisdom, don't lose discretion, they will be, and here's life again, third time, life for your soul and adornment for your neck. So life for your soul, I mean, now he's talking about spirituality. This isn't just about don't be lazy, that's what fools do. Don't take 5-hour naps every day, you'll have your house fall in, right, which is what, some of the stuff he'll say later, but it's so much more than that. This is about your spirituality. This is about your devotion. This is about your religion, right? Your religion is life in the soul eternally, and this comes from the revealed wisdom of God, who is, in fact, the creator and redeemer. Yeah? And then, life for your soul, adornment for your neck. You could see this just as another, like the gold and silver comment from earlier about something that's profitable, but you could also see this as a foreshadowing of the adornment of the white robes and the shining crowns that is our new flesh in the resurrection, right? The images of the resurrection we see in Revelation especially, right? Everyone's in a white robe, but hey, we're not all just going to be dressed in white. We're going to have everlasting fleshly bodies that we're not ashamed of being naked in anymore. What a thing, right? What an adornment. And here again, this tree of life, this person wisdom, this lady who we should seek at all costs with peace in her hand, and profit in all that she speaks as she blesses is also that adornment that wraps around our neck to make really our entire self renewed and born again in the most physical and beautiful sense. So again, you know, Solomon's working in cycles here. He's dropping ideas and picking up on them and expanding on them and then bringing small blips back so we don't forget what was there. And this is just the first taste we have of the value of lady wisdom over against this dame, this prostitute, this harlot folly, who he's already introduced, but who also is going to come back in a little bit as well.
Talk about this, because it begins with the one who finds this is blessed. Talk about the search for wisdom.
Well, that's interesting, because what is that, right? How do you make that practical and something you do every day? And if we're going to be dogmatic about it, we know that there's no such thing as a seeker, not really. If we mean a sinful man who's looking for the real God, we're doing the opposite of that. We're trying to hide from him, right? We're trying to run away from him. So what does it mean to search for wisdom? Well, it means first that wisdom has come and spoken to you. The book starts off that way. My son, listen to my words. Once that gospel has come and regenerated or renewed you, though, You do have this new man that is awakened, this new mind that is given to you by the word of Christ and by the active power of the Spirit in those words. It is not without effect. It is hungry. The faithful believer who knows their sin is hungry for the gospel. They don't just know it or put it on a test. They want more. They're also hungry for the law. They're hungry for the law to be true and good and fulfilled in their lives, even though they find that they can't do it when they try. That hunger and that search, I don't know that I could give it to you in a bullet point list of what it looks like every day. Other than that, it is connected to, and I know not everyone likes Gerhard Ferdy and everything that he said. I don't like everything that he said, but this particular phrase I think is very helpful. A large part of sanctification is getting used to our justification. is learning to stand on grace and not be good enough by yourself as your reason for trying to be better. Not as your reason to stay where you are, but as your reason for wanting more, as your hunger, right? As your thirst for that water of life that is both the law and gospel of God in their full measure poured out upon you. And the search for wisdom is that. Today, what does that mean for me? It means I got up, I did a radio show in which I read the Bible, because that's my job. I was in another city. I drove home to try to take care of the stuff that I got to do for my congregation, which is largely helping them have a pictorial directory so we can call each other. You know, I don't know that I'd call that, you know, sitting on a mountaintop pursuing wisdom, and yet it is, because it's pursuing the good of my neighbor according to the word of God. It's fulfilling my vocation to my family and my people within my employ, and other people would have different employers and different people that they're trying to serve with their employ. So hopefully you can make that connection. And it's doing it as one redeemed by Christ the crucified, as one baptized into him, as one who needs more of his word, as one who knows that at the end of the day, it's grace alone on which I stand. And I need those words there with me while I'm doing these other things with my hands, lest I trust in my hands, lest I trust in the riches of the world, and so that I would trust instead in this far better thing, which is not this life, but the life of the world to come, the path of peace, which is standing on the last day, looking at Jesus and hearing him say, "Well done, good and faithful servant, I'm giving this to you." To let that be behind everything else that I do, as mundane as it may seem in this day, and to not forget that that's a better thing. It's more profit than gold. It's a greater life than the present.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is senior pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois. He's host of a radio show called Sharper Iron and author of the books Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible, and Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again. You can find both of these books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for Broken and Echo, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Jonathan, thanks.
Glad to be here. See you soon.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series, Does God Change His Mind in the Old Testament? Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. We'll talk about some cases of that in Jeremiah, Joel, and probably most famously in Jonah. We'll discuss media coverage of religion with syndicated columnist Terry Mattingly and its responding to Calvinist proof text with Pastor Jordan Cooper. This is a picture of Christ, this wisdom that is this valuable woman. It's also a call to faith to search out and to find the wisdom that is only found in Jesus Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.